Hey, this is Cash.
I'm Joe.
We're middle-aged mediocre. We
sure are.
And we're back.
Yeah, we're back.
We always say that, like we, you know, of course we are.
Yeah.
If we...
We weren't back.
If we hadn't recorded...
We weren't back last week.
There's been any time between recordings. We're always back. We are back. Joel's energy level today is through the roof.
And then back to the basement.
I had to drug him earlier just to calm him down.
Up to the roof. Don't tell people.
But yeah, we're back. I'm back
from
Orlando,
yeah.
Florida.
What's the zip code, area code or whatever?
361123.
No, like we're 304, you know? Like you don't.
Oh, like that, the area code?
Yeah, I said zip code first, but I meant area code.
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh.
I don't know what the fuck zip
code
is.
You get like tattooed on your neck. Holy shit, I saw a lady yesterday. She had the word bitch tattooed underneath her eye.
That's a bold choice.
That's a fucking bold. And it was like all like, almost like, I don't know the type of font, but it was like almost like cathedralish. Does that make sense? Like the gothic kind
Yeah.
Like where like they have, but I was like, huh.
So it was classy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was classy.
She's a
classy bitch.
I'm sure it wasn't in prison. It's probably like juvie or something.
Yeah.
More, but yeah.
That, I mean, you know.
I just thought that because I was expecting you to come back with Orlando's area code tattooed somewhere on you.
Oh, yeah.
And that made me think of that girl yesterday with the tattoo of the word bitch under her eye. And she was customer service, too. She was like taking the like we went to Slop Shop for local shout out Slop Shop,
yeah,
local eatery here. We went for lunch and just
kind of makes sense though. Bitch. She's working at the Slop Shop. That kind of makes sense.
Right underneath her eye.
Yeah. No,
like, and I'm sure she's like I can be however I want now because it says I'm a bitch. What else do you expect?
Places are hard up to hire people. You can. I had to talk myself out of getting a tattoo at Universal Studios because Hart and Huntington Tattoo Company is there.
Yeah.
And it
sounds like an 80s detective show.
Hart and Huntington. Yeah, I didn't even go in because I was like, the prices for this are going to be so fucking crazy. Is that Corey Hart.
Yeah, Corey Hart.
Corey Hart?
I think.
Okay.
Is that the one married to Pink?
Yeah.
The singer, not the caller.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, he married the caller. yeah, but I was like, that's going to be so... Oh, yeah, because I think it's spelled... Is it Carey Hart? Not Corey, because Corey Hart's the 80s guy.
Oh, yeah.
Carey Hart.
Okay, yeah, maybe Carey Hart.
Okay. But yeah, back from Orlando, had a work conference thing, but went to Universal Studios on
Big wigging it. Private jet, right?
I wish.
Oh, no.
My God. First time ever flying.
Yeah?
And...
Oh, how was that?
Movies have lied to me. Like... The flight was fine.
There's no snakes, were there?
Not a single snake. I kept yelling, where are the snakes on this motherfucking plane? There better be some motherfucking snakes.
Yeah,
no, I like, just movies and TV shows, like, planes always look bigger on the inside.
Oh, yeah.
They are so goddamn tiny.
Oh, yeah, there's not. That's true, yeah. On movies, they always make it, they're like cartwheeling down the aisle.
Yeah, there's like some space. Yeah, so maybe like a jumbo jet has like more space.
Yeah.
But no, in the flight down, me and the other, so three of us, the three biggest guys were in the same row.
Nice.
I was like, that's great. That's good ticketing.
Oh, man.
Then on the way back, luckily, I got a little bit of reprieve.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was first time flying. I got the window seat on the way down. It's pretty badass.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool.
You're just plummeting through the air.
Yeah, it's not like we had really bad turbulence on the way back.
And these are straight shots, right? Straight to
2 hours.
Orlando.
Actually, under 2 hours. It was like an hour and 40.
Straight to Orlando. Though?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it was an hour and 48 minutes each way.
The takeoffs are always a little.
Even that was fine. The only thing that was so when we landed in Orlando, because I'd never, you know, first time ever landing. So when we landed, I looked over at one of the other guys and I was like, that felt pretty good, you know, whatever. And he was like, that's the smoothest landing I've ever been a part of. You know, so I was like, oh, whatever. On the way, now landing in West Virginia, that one I kind of thought.
Yeah, the dogs, the cows, and the goats in the
field.
And
I kind of thought flames were going to come my way.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it was a little rougher. Yeah. Like, that guy hit the goddamn tarmac hard. So, yeah. But it was, yeah, flying was cool. So I totally.
It's like driving, but you're in the air.
But you're in the air, man.
what?
So when I first say this, you're going to go, yeah, no shit, that's why people fly. But so I get that it's a much quicker way to travel.
Uh-huh.
But time is different. Like, an hour and 48 minutes flying is so much faster than an hour and 48 minutes anything else.
Yeah. Because even that it flies by, doesn't it? Time flies when you're flying all the time. Am I right?
You are not wrong, sir. The flight down, I was, like, messing around with the Wi-Fi, trying to figure out something. I was like, I don't know if I want to listen to an audiobook.
They bought the Wi-Fi?
It was already.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they bought it when they booked tickets.
Okay, cool. Did you have a screen or anything to watch a movie on?
No, I mean, my phone.
One, yeah.
No, this. But, like, I was, like, messing around trying to decide, like, podcast, audiobook, YouTube video, something like that. And, like, it felt like I was maybe messing with my phone for 5 minutes. 10 minutes, and I looked up at one point, and I'm like looking out the window, and I asked the guy next to me, I was like, and I knew him, it wasn't just
I was gonna say, this guy next to you,
I'm not the guy that's gonna talk to random people. Yeah, I'm not the guy that's gonna talk to random people. But I looked out the window, and I said something about, like, I wonder where we're at right now. I was like, thinking we were in West Virginia still.
Yeah,
and he was like kind of tracking the flight on his phone. We were already halfway there.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, fucking, seriously? Like, 35 minutes had passed in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
So, a year or so ago, you could not have convinced me I would have been able to fly. The thought of it terrified me.
Uh-huh.
I was just like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I got to the airport, and even, like, I was even wondering, like, when they called for us to board, I was, like, kind of all morning thinking, like, I hope I don't have a panic attack. Like, I hope I'm not the guy.
That's scary just to have the thought, because... The thought's there, so
the seeds
planted.
But even, like, it was a passing thought, and then whenever they, you know, caught us for boarding, and then once I sat down, and, like, even during takeoff, I was just like, I don't give a fuck what happens.
Yeah.
Like, I don't give a shit
if we go. Nothing matters.
Like, I feel really bad for my you know, family and everything and friends, but, like, as far as I was concerned, I was like, whatever.
You'd survive. You'd make it.
I'd be the one.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
But yeah, not bad. Not bad at all.
You survived Florida. Good job.
Yeah, we were in Orlando at a resort on Universal Studios.
And when you land, like in Hawaii, they give you Lays.
We got a
Lay. They just give you like meth. Oh, okay.
No, we got one.
Wow.
The resort we stayed at was like very Hawaii themed.
Oh.
So like they texted me throughout the week, like the resort did, and they'd be like, aloha. You know, they'd ask me if there was anything I needed or whatever, and, like, the first night I had trouble sleeping because I didn't have a fan.
Yeah.
And so, like, the next morning, like, as I'm walking over to the park, they're like, aloha, Josh. Do you need extra towels or anything? And I was like, nah, I'm good on that. Would you guys happen to have a fan I could have, you know, to help me sleep? And they're like, let us know when you get back. We'll bring you one right up. So I get back, and I text them, hey, I'm back in my room. 5 minutes later, knock on my door. I was like, I could get used to this shit. Like,
what kind of fan was it?
Like, just a box fan.
Fans? Oh,
just a box fan.
Box fan.
Yeah. But then, like, we stayed. So in the resort, they have a water taxi that'll take you over to the park. And
so it's like driving, but on water.
And it's amazing.
Wow, you were all over the place. Land, air, sea.
I was everywhere, man.
Wow.
If I could only travel by water taxi from now on. It's the best way to travel.
Might have to move. I mean, I buy that in Parkersburg. I don't know. We're on the river.
It's so fucking nice.
Yeah.
Like, and you just, because everybody, like, a lot of them, like, would.
People wave at you, probably.
Yeah. You get some waivers.
Like, you got a boat?
And then, of course, if another boat's passing.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Every time, waving. You're like, hi, hello. But yeah, it's. Have you been to Universal Studios?
I've never been to Florida.
You never been to Florida? That's right. We were talking about
it.
Yeah. So, I didn't realize. So Universal Studios has three parks altogether in there. There's the one that's basically all Harry Potter, Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, never heard of it.
It's a thing.
Okay.
Apparently some people like it.
Wow.
A lot of people there on a Monday.
Wow.
Lots of people.
Wow.
But like.
Wow, wow, wow.
So on the one side, you have like the Harry Potter stuff. You have Jurassic Park stuff.
Okay, I've heard of that.
And then there's another Harry Potter park. And then you have like Simpsons stuff, which is badass.
I'd like to go to that. I'm not even watching Simpsons anymore, but just growing up on it.
It's so cool.
Being 44 and remembering Tracy Ullman's show in the first 10 seasons.
It was definitely the cool, like it, and then they had a Universal Monsters horror makeup show.
I saw your pictures of that.
Which was really cool. It was really fun. That was probably my favorite thing at the actual park itself. I had a Duff beer, which was pretty awesome. It was pretty cool. It was so fucking hot though, and like I was.
How hot was it?
96 degrees.
Wow. Okay.
And sunny. We did get a lot of overcast, which was nice. But yeah, so it was fun.
Was it more of a dry heat?
Yeah.
One of those wet heats that you hear so much about.
Mornings wet heats.
Yeah.
Wet hot American summers. And then once it started the day and evening, it was just a dry heat. Uh-huh. But yeah, pretty nice. I could definitely get used to resort life.
Was there a VCR in your room?
No.
What?
I will be traveling with one next time.
Okay.
And taking a separate bag just with tapes and a VCR.
Welcome to the TV. They're like, hola, hola, oh,
aloha.
Not
yeah.
Dora. Like, what do you need? Like, I gotta watch my tapes.
Like, do you guys have AV cable adapters?
Your phone just blows up.
Yeah, resort life is pretty nice. Like, we only left the resort to go to Universal Studios, which was, I mean, it's connected, but then we went like 3 miles away to play Top Golf.
Yeah.
Other than that, we were at the resort the whole time. Just had shit, like, because between the parks, it's called City Walk, and that's where all the restaurants are. And you can get there without actually.
There's like no laws there.
It seemed like it. Kind of seemed like it. You didn't have to have tickets to the park to go to City Walk.
Oh, nice.
Like you could go in there and eat at all the different places. So yeah, other than that, like we basically just stayed there.
They have McDonald's.
They had a Burger King.
Oh, that's even better, I think.
Yeah, very fancy Burger King.
All right.
Which was weird.
Well, it is royalty.
Yeah, true.
It is royalty.
And then there was like a Burger King, Panda Express maybe. There was like a Cup Moe's. There was like 3 or 4 places that I was like, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's a random thing to have, but I can only imagine what a Whopper cost.
Yeah.
At that one. I'm sure a Whopper combo was about $45.
Stuff was expensive.
Everything was so expensive.
I heard but you had to pay to throw stuff away. I heard one of these parks was doing that.
Oh, that it wasn't there.
Where like they were gonna start making you like so that way I don't know why, but yeah, you have to pay to throw stuff away. Give it a go, motherfucker!
People are going to litter.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I
crazy.
Said.
That it was.
Like, oh, you know it's free. Hello.
So you
air.
Could get a souvenir cup, and it cost $20 to get one. Any of the places that serve food or drink there. And like when I got it, a lot of like everybody I was with was like, you know, kind of like I don't think they were judging me, but they were all like, "You're paying $20 for a souvenir."
Oh, they were fucking judging you.
But
I got so many texts about it. They're like, "Dude, your buddy bought a fucking souvenir cup."
Well, what they didn't know was
yeah.
All around the park.
I said, give him a chance. Give him a chance.
He has a plan.
He's smarter than what he looks like.
And here's why. So all around the park, any place that had like drinks or stuff, and just throughout the park, little vending machine, little soda dispensers and stuff, you could just keep refilling it.
So you pay that $120.
All goddamn day.
Yeah.
I'm just going up, loading up with ice. Who's the dummy now? And then I threw it away. At the end of the day.
The park.
I was like, I'm not bringing this back with me. I have no use for it now. But I drank more than $20 worth of beverages.
Beverages.
So yeah, pretty good time.
Good.
I hate traveling now. Like I would rather, if I was going to travel, I'd rather have like a big RV or something.
Yeah.
And just like, go to parks.
Well, the worst part about travel, too, is the actual schedule of it.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like, oh, my God, I got to get here by this time so I can do things until this time. And then I have to drive back and be back by this, to me, anyway.
And then, so we landed in Orlando. We had to get a taxi to the resort, which, thank God, like, we didn't rent a car because driving in that mess would have not been fun. Because there's just so many lanes. So much traffic.
Yeah.
But everybody, we had a taxi driver to the resort, then we Ubered everywhere else. And everybody down there drives like a goddamn maniac. Like,
you have to.
You do have to.
Yeah.
But it was just all such a. It was a hassle. And what, like, the company I work for paid for basically everything.
Yeah.
So it was no sweat off me with us. Like, they made it as easy as humanly possible. Like, they even, when we were leaving Orlando and going through TSA, they even did like a, it's some sort of thing you can pay for, like pre, like, I don't know, you just go through the separate line.
Yeah.
So there's hundreds and hundreds of people
waiting.
When
I was in Colorado, I don't know the company, but there's people like walking up and down trying to sell people on that.
Really? It's so much. I mean, like,
because Colorado was like a 2-3 hour line to get through or something. Oh, it was.
People were looking at us like they wanted to fucking murder us. Who knows how long?
Fucking guys.
Yeah, and we just went right through TSA, got right through. So,
is there a lot, any kids on your flight, babies?
Just on the
like
way
that?
Back, there was a.
Because I always heard like
quiet.
Flights to Orlando can be that bad because it's obviously a lot of kids going to Disney World.
No, they were actually. I don't think there were any on the way down. And then on the way back, like before the flight took off, there were some kids and they were like yelling and stuff, like just being kids.
You stood up and be like, hey!
But once we took off, like they must have had, you know, I'm sure they had a tablet or whatever and headphones. Didn't hear anything. There was three women behind us that as soon as we could see West Virginia again, you could see the mountains and like, well, they're hills really. I mean.
Yeah.
But just I heard one lady at least six times say, "Sure is God's country." I was like, I get it, lady. Everybody gets it. It's fucking God's country. We know.
Almost heaven.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I would prefer
tear
not
rolls
to.
Rolls down her face.
Yeah. Oh, there were so many at Universal Studios. I heard probably 40 different languages, which was pretty cool. Yeah. Like. And I would hear, like, people from Australia or, like, New Zealand, you know, and I would just kind of follow them a little bit because I was just like, oh, I love that accent. I just listened to them talk. It was cool. It was a pretty rad time. I was at the park for 8 hours, and by the time that 8 hours hit, like, I was just like, I either have to leave now or somebody's carrying my ass back.
Yeah, that's
like,
a lot.
I couldn't move. I got back Thursday, Friday morning, went to the chiropractor.
Sounds more harder than wrestling.
Yes. Yes. All the walking was insane. Even like going from my room to the conference every day. And then, you know, we'd meet up for lunch or whatever. And then back to the conference, walking from different rooms for each presentation. Lots of walking. But that.
You get your rascal, you little rascal.
I always look forward to that water taxi.
Yeah.
Anytime I could take it. Like, I honestly, there was one night I almost considered just. Because it runs till 2 a.m. So there was, like, one night where I was almost like, do I just want to, like, go chill on the water taxi? Like, and just – because the one guy that was driving the boat that night, like, me and him were kind of shooting the shit a little bit, waiting for people to get – I was the first one on there. And he was
pretty – how fast does this thing go, mister?
he seemed pretty cool. So I was like, I think if I went on there and was just like, hey, man, I'm just going to chill on this. Like, just – I think he would have, like, been like, yeah, I don't care, whatever. But yeah, it was a good time. I'd rather probably not go back though.
Like, yeah.
And flying too is just I mean, it wasn't as bad as I thought anywhere near it, but like
a lot of lines.
Such a hassle. And you still have like I still was just like, I don't necessarily need to be putting myself in this situation. Like the plane could go down still. Like I could just drive.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, man.
It's a long ass drive. I've driven to Florida a couple times, Yeah, so it was very the flight back, a lot of turbulence.
Mm-hmm. Shaky, shake.
Very, very shaky. Couldn't get my Wi-Fi to connect on the way back, so I just kind of sat there and like looked at it. And like I'd pull a book out and read like 4 or 5 sentences, and they'd be like, I don't want to do this anymore, and I'd just sit there.
Oh, man, my first plane ride, I got Mick Foley's first autobiography. Her biography.
Have a nice day.
Yeah, whatever. It was like we went to Portland, so I pretty much read the whole book.
That's
on the way. It was pretty cool.
But yeah, so.
But that's neither here nor there.
That was in Florida.
That was then.
We're back
now.
In West Virginia now.
And I last time I said I was gonna come with 3 stories,
and you came.
I came
with
nothing.
Nothing. Okay.
Nothing.
Okay. So, good thing I have a story.
Good.
Ready. But before we get into the story.
I was like, you've been busy with anything.
Before we get into the story, though, I do have, I think I was talking about in the last episode, that show I'm watching called From.
Yeah.
So I finished the first season of it. So really quick.
But it's like on Apple or something, right?
So on MGM Plus.
Yeah, I'll never see it.
So really quick little synopsis, and then I got a question for you. So a bunch of people get trapped in this town. And they come from all different places, but they all saw, like, they all got redirected because there was a tree in the road. And they couldn't get past it, so they had to, like, go down this other road. And then they wind up in this town. Once they're in this town, they're stuck. They cannot get out of it. And then every night, these people come from the woods. And if you're not like locked inside your like locked inside a building, and these people get in, like they turn into these like monsters and just fucking devour you. So, but then during the day, you know, whatever, you're good.
Cool. Yeah.
So and it's getting very fucking weird. I think the island, or I think the place is controlled by a spider demon, maybe. I don't know. There's all of a sudden a lot of spider webs around. I don't know what the fuck's going on. But here's my question to you.
Okay.
So, say you find yourself in this situation where there's really like no laws. There's no, you really don't have to have a job anymore because there's, you know, there's no currency now. You can kind of like, now you don't have like access to things, but you can kind of just like live free. But then at night you just have to make sure you're locked in.
Yeah.
So say you find yourself in the situation and you're there for a little while and you start to kind of grow accustomed to it. And then suddenly somebody figures out a way to get out of this. Do you think you would want to get out of it and go back to normal life? Or do you think you would become like, to the point where you're like, I can just lock myself in at night and I'm all good. And then like, I don't have to have like responsibilities really. Because I'm leaning towards, I think I would just be like, I'll stay. You guys have fun. I'm just going to chill.
Nah, I think I'd probably go back to regular life. That's all I know.
Okay.
Even after that, that's all I know.
Well, you wouldn't know that. That wouldn't be all you know anymore. Oh, yeah, you would suddenly know
right
that
now,
you don't
I
have
know.
To live in a
right
society.
Now, it's all I
don't
I
have
know.
To live in a society anymore.
That's all I know.
All right. All right. I think I would just chill. Just, I don't have to work.
Can I take my VHS tapes?
Yeah, there's like electricity somehow.
All right.
So, yeah.
Well, that McDonald's.
They have like, so like they separated into like two groups. So there's like what they call Colony House.
Uh-huh.
And then there's like the town. So like in the town, they still kind of have a little bit of like order. Like they have like a diner and a bar. And, you know, people live in their own houses and stuff. But then the Colony House is just this big-ass house where, like, every night once they lock themselves in, they just drink, get high, fuck, like, everything else.
I need my privacy.
Yeah.
I need my own dwelling.
Okay. I think I would just be like, there's, like, a ritual.
Yeah.
A ritual where you choose if you want to live in Colony House or the town, and once you choose, that's it. No going back.
Oh, okay.
So once you make your choice, you're stuck there.
I mean, I feel like you can still just spend the night every now and then in a Colony House.
Maybe, yeah, probably. probably wouldn't give a shit.
Everyone's all fucked up.
But so I do have a story.
Okay.
So this one's going to take us back to mid-80s.
Okay.
And it's going to take place in Fayetteville, North Carolina, where the Eastburn family was preparing to move to bloody England.
Oh.
Because
going across the pond.
Going across the pond for a little tea. So Katie Eastburn.
Crikey! That's, never mind.
And her husband, Gary. Gary was an Air Force captain.
Gary. Imagine looking at a baby and being like, oh, I'm going to name you Gary.
That's a Gary. they're a military family, and they were getting ready to move over to England because Gary was slated for a job as a liaison to the Royal Air Force.
So
they have a couple kids.
I would love to be lazy for a living.
That'd be great.
But I can be lazy on.
I can be lazy on.
Fuck yeah.
Lazy on anywhere.
Fuck.
So they're preparing for this move. Gary is actually out of town getting some stuff in, you know, his affairs in order.
Uh-huh.
Getting some business things taken care of before he goes.
Sounds like a businessman, old Gary.
Katie's back home with the kids, and everything's pretty much ready to go. Katie's cool with the move. You know, she kind of knows. She married
him. She gets the deal.
Married a military guy, yeah. She knows. So the only thing they're trying to figure out, though, is they have a dog named Dixie. And Dixie was getting up there in age, so they really didn't feel like it was going to be fair to, like, make Dixie, you know, fly.
Might as well just kill her, right?
Well, if you're a certain politician that wants to be vice president, have you heard about that?
I think I saw like a hot headline about someone killing a dog or something.
Yeah, some woman.
Sidebar.
Some lady, I think she's a governor or she's, I don't know, but yeah, she's trying to be Trump's VIP.
Uh-huh.
She wrote a book, and in the book she talks about how she killed her puppy.
VP or VIP?
VP.
Okay.
I said VIP, didn't I? Yeah, she like killed her puppy because like it just wasn't, it, like didn't do much.
Oh.
So, and even Trump's like, not like Trump hasn't like.
It was a bad dog.
Trump was basically. The only response he's given when somebody's asked if he was still considered, she was like, apparently, like, I guess, the lead to be his VP.
Uh-huh.
Everybody was like, yeah, that's who it's going to be. And, like, I guess after this book came out, they asked Trump about it, if she was still, and even he said, like, his answer was just, she's having a lot of problems right now. I think she's really going through some things. So even Trump's like, I draw the line at puppy killing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm an awful human being. But even I'm not going to, like, brag about killing a puppy.
Grab her by the puppy, I always say.
So, okay, back to the story. So Katie Eastburn's at home with the kids. Gary is off doing Gary stuff. And they used, like, a, you know, before he had the internet and everything, he used a classified ad.
Before the internet?
Yeah, you remember. You remember.
All I know.
Is that your catchphrase today? So Dixie was an English setter, which is weird that it's she's an English setter and they don't want to take her to England.
Yeah, what the
whatever.
Fuck?
Take her back to her homeland. So she in the Beeline Grab Brag, which was a newspaper that served the military community in the area where they lived, because they lived
Fort Bragg.
So
I know some shit.
You do. It's all
okay.
You know. It's all you know.
Yeah, that's all I know.
So,
all I know is all I know, you know?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So they put it in this paper, like, hey, you know, we got this dog, you know, looking for a good home for Dixie.
Hey, now, we got a dog now.
Named Dixie. Who wants
she's
it?
She's a good girl.
But she's old as shit.
We put that song on the other day, and Kylie's daughter was like, hey, it's the Shrek song. And I was like, it's Smash Mouth! And he's dead! And he always...
It is just the Shrek song.
I know it
yeah.
is.
Didn't one? What was their other song that was on there? Walking on. Didn't they have another one?
Oh, they had one first. Yeah, that was like the big hit. Oh,
and I think it became a Shrek song too.
Everything sure. eventually becomes a Shrek.
If it's Smash Mouth or Bare Naked Ladies, it becomes a Shrek song.
Oh.
So they put this in this paper, and on May 7th, 1985, a 27-year-old Army sergeant named Tim Hennis responded to the ad.
And also, I say the song came on. I requested it. We were on Spotify.
That makes sense.
So
yeah,
I can't even be like, oh, we were just done switching through the dial.
That checks out.
I was like, I want to hear All-Star, goddammit. All right, I'm sorry.
So
I just had to get that out there.
So Tim Hennis, he's 27 years old. He responds to this ad. You know, he would love to take Dixie.
Yeah.
So he talks it over with his wife, Angela. She agrees, you know, we can make room for Dixie in our lives.
If it makes you happy, honey.
So he, according to Tim, he drives across town to go see the dog.
If something happens to the dog in this story.
The dog is fine.
Okay.
I will go ahead and let everybody know that now. I mean, now the dog's.
Oh, it's dead as fuck.
But.
It doesn't.
At the time.
Okay.
Dixie was still.
Okay.
Dixie
does
this
not, isn't a story about, like, the death of Dixie.
No. Dixie survives this story.
Good. Good.
I don't
cool.
know Dixie made it much longer. But
okay, yeah.
I can't speak to that.
Yeah.
So, according to Tim, he arrived shortly before 9 p.m., walked up, knocked on the door, and Katie. She answered, you know, Katie was petite, short, dark hair, bright smile, pale complexion. Now, Tim, he was 6'6", big dude, real big dude.
Hey, how's the weather up there?
Yeah. He, you know, pretty handsome fella, sturdy guy,
yeah.
Pretty rock solid military guy. A little bit of a mustache. Thin,
I'm jealous,
all
right?
Yeah.
I wish I was fucking Tim.
So,
I don't wish I was fucking him. I wish I was Tim.
No, you said it. You said what you said.
I didn't.
So,
it's all I know!
According to Tim, Katie told him that she just put her three young daughters to bed. You know.
He's like, I'm here for the dog.
Yeah, and, you know.
The less words we say, the better.
So... you threw me off there.
Hey now, you're a rock star.
So anyways, he meets Dixie, he meets Katie. He likes Dixie. So he's like, you know, takes Dixie, gets back into the car, drives off. So Dixie's found a new home, right? So then Gary, he's, you know, down in Alabama.
Doing Gary stuff.
He's at a squadron officer
school.
He's
on Gary time.
Yeah, he's on Gary time. He's down there, but he's been trying to call his wife.
Yeah.
They have a Saturday morning phone call every Saturday without fail. And he calls her for that conversation. She doesn't answer. So he keeps trying all day Saturday. No answer. Sunday was Mother's Day, which is
tomorrow.
Why we're doing this story.
Okay.
Because tomorrow is Mother's Day.
Okay.
And this, so.
You think Dixie ever had puppies?
Maybe.
Man, I bet Dixie would have been a good mom.
Dixie survives the story. We don't know a lot about Dixie. Other than,
I just want an episode about Dixie.
Other
now.
Than Dixie had a good life with the Eastburns, aww, and then Tim Hennis came and picked Dixie up.
He's
so,
a big guy, so I bet he could literally pick Dixie up.
Yeah.
And she probably liked that. And he'd like scratch her little belly. And she'd do that thing where dogs kind of smile.
Are we just
going to
talk about Dixie in general?
Are this not a Dixie episode?
It's not. It's not. So, again, so Gary's trying to call all day Saturday. Can't get a hold of her. So then Sunday, Mother's Day, the Eastburns, their neighbor, Bob, got to have a neighbor named Bob.
Bob, yeah.
He had noticed that there was a lot of...
Now, was he a Robert? Maybe shortened to Bob?
I think he
was
a Bobbert.
He was born a Bob?
I think he was Bobbert.
Bobbert.
Yeah.
Is anyone born a Bob?
Ooh.
Is it just Robert, and it's always shortened down to Bob?
I would think that if you name your baby Bob...
Just Bob.
Then you're a psychopath.
Bob.
Like, you're really lazy. You're just like, I don't fucking call Bob. I don't know. I don't care.
And then, like, the middle name, you could call him, like, Lee. Bob Lee.
Ert.
Bob Lee.
Bob Lee. That's, I like that. So, where am I at again?
Talking about Dixie. She's
so, Bob. Bob notices that...
he's like, where's Dixie? I mean...
Shut the fuck up,
Bob.
That there's a lot of uncollected newspapers in the driveway.
Oh.
Mail's piling up.
That was Dixie's job.
And... He went over, rang the doorbell a few times, no answer. Then Bob's wife,
Sharon.
Let's call her Sharon.
Cheryl.
Cheryl. Cheryl.
Patty.
Seafeld's their last name, so Cheryl Seafeld.
Okay, yeah.
Bob and Cheryl.
Yeah.
We're gonna go with that. So Cheryl, she says, so she ends up calling the sheriff's office because, according to her, she could hear a baby inside the house crying.
Oh.
Like it had been crying for a couple days.
Yeah.
So that's not good.
Like, hey, baby, no one's coming. Stop
hey,
crying.
Baby, what are you yelling about?
Yeah.
So the officer arrives at the Eastburns house.
Arrest a baby for a public nuisance.
Tries to, you know, knocks on the door, nothing. Finally, they cut the window screen. The officer climbs in. And inside, when he climbs in, they find 22-month-old Jana. That was the baby that had been crying.
Yeah.
So the baby's in the crib crying her fucking little head off. So the officer grabs the baby, hands the baby out to the Seafelts, probably another officer.
Yeah.
Probably not, just random people. And then he realizes that the house smells pretty bad, real bad. So the officer starts walking through the hallway, and he notices dead bodies at the end of the hall.
Ooh.
So... He calls for the homicide unit. So then Robert Biddle and Jack Watts. Detectives from the Cumberland County Sheriff's Department. They came to the scene.
Jack is getting, he's pretty close to being too old for this shit.
This is his last day.
Yeah.
So pretty good names, though, for detectives.
He sees a picture of Dixie. He's like, where's the dog?
God damn it. I wish I hadn't brought up Dixie.
I'm glad you did.
So they, as Biddle says, death has a smell, its own aroma. And he knew it. And he says, I'll never forget the smell in there. It wasn't good.
No.
It was bad. It smelled like death.
Smells like death.
So the detectives proceed through the house. They check the living room. They see a pair of jeans and two buttons that have been ripped off a blouse and a pair of torn ladies' underwear.
Ooh.
Not a good thing to see when you're smelling death.
No.
Then they find a 5-year-old named Kara. She's curled up under her Star Wars blanket, and she had been stabbed repeatedly in the chest.
Oh, fuck.
Next, they enter the master bedroom, where they find Aaron, 3 years old. laying on one side of the bed. She had been bludgeoned in the chest and the back. And then on the other side, there was Katie, naked from the waist down. She'd been stabbed 15 times and assaulted as semen was found inside of her body. All three of the victims, their throats had been slit.
Jesus.
So stabbed,
bludgeoned.
Bludgeoned, and then, yeah, throat slit. So then they have to call Gary. So Gary's in Alabama, and one of his colleagues yells up, "Gary, it's for you." And Gary jumps up, thinking, you know, maybe Katie's finally calling him back, and asks who it is, and the guy says, "I don't know, some detective." So the detective tells Gary, "There's been a death in the family. You need to come home right away." Wouldn't say anything else, though. Just that's, yeah. And that's got to be.
Oh, yeah.
So Gary immediately flies to Fayetteville, goes directly to the police station, and, of course, the police start, you know, asking Gary some questions. Like,
Gary's on the plane, and somebody beside him is like, "That's the smoothest plane I've ever felt, mister." And Gary's like, "Listen, there's a death in the family."
It's probably Dixie. She's old. So the police are asking Gary, like, you know, where you been? What's up, Gary? What kind of Gary stuff you been up
sup,
to?
Sup, sup,
Gary.
Sup.
But then they're asking him, you know, is there anybody that, like, do you guys have enemies? Is there anybody that would want to do you guys harm? And he says, only, you know, no, like, things are good. He's like, we did recently, Katie had recently given away, you know, Dixie.
Yeah.
Like, some, we'd put the ad in there. But Gary didn't know anything about who got the doll. He just knew that they were trying to. So later that night, detectives return to the home. Start, you know, crime scene technicians are in there. They find fingerprints and hair. They do a luminol test, and there's blood on the walls and in the master bathroom. Somebody had tried to, like, clean stuff up, but it was not a good job. Like, they did not do a great job of cleaning up the blood. So then, shortly after midnight, a young man named Patrick Cohn, went to the police station. And he said that around 3:30 in the morning on that Friday, he had seen a tall white man wearing jeans, a knit cap, and a black members-only jacket leaving the Eastburns driveway with a garbage bag slung over his shoulder. Patrick Cohn was a janitor whose shift started that day at dawn. He was always walking. He always went for a little walk, though, like before. And he even talked to the man. He said, the man said to him, "Leaving a little early this morning, aren't you?" So he kind of got a glimpse of him. Mm-hmm. He did say that he saw that the man got into a white Chevette, which is the same car Tim Hennis had pulled up.
Oh.
So then that Tuesday, Cohn worked with an agent from North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation to create a composite sketch of the man. Across town, Gary walked through his home with the detectives looking for any missing items, but they found an envelope of cash, Katie's ATM card, or they found that an envelope of cash, Katie's ATM card, and a piece of paper with the ATM password were all gone. So, looks like maybe a break-in, maybe a robbery, home invasion. So then Wednesday, Tim Hennis is at home having lunch with Angela, his wife.
And Dixie.
And they see a news broadcast on television. And it's saying that the investigators are interested in a man who drives a white Chevette and had recently picked up an English Setter from 367 Summerhill Road.
That's not like me.
So Hennis would later say, "My wife and I were shocked. It was the first time we realized that the lady who had been murdered was the one that I had picked up the dog from." So Hennis, Angela, and their newborn daughter, Christina, drove to the police station in downtown Fayetteville. An officer led Hennis into a room for questioning. When the detective sees Hennis, he paused because that was who was in the sketch. So the authorities determined that the murders likely took place on Thursday night, as Katie had been seen by the neighbors earlier that evening, and the newspapers had begun piling up on Friday morning. So the detectives asked Tim Hennis to recount his activities that night. Hennis said that he had driven his wife and daughter to his in-laws and then returned home, got some gas on the way home. He answered all their questions. He was a bit impatient, a little bit arrogant, but he answered out all the questions. He was there for about 7 hours, provided blood, saliva, and hair samples, as well as fingerprints and palm prints. When the detectives asked him about Katie Eastburn, he acknowledged that, yeah, I picked up the dog on Tuesday. Never saw her again, though. Didn't even get her name. He said that Katie had called him on Thursday night to see how Dixie was getting along, and that was it. The detectives would say that Tim Hennis was a pretty difficult man to interrogate. He wasn't dumb. He knew what to say. You know, he said just what he had to say without saying too much.
A tough one to crack.
The officers have the janitor that had came to the police station in the first place to review a photo lineup with Hennis while he was still in custody. A photograph was taken of Hennis, and the image was pasted onto a manila folder alongside five other photos of men resembling him. And when they asked Cohn if he recognized any of the other men, he said no. Five has his nose, but it's definitely not him, and it's not number two. Or he said it's not number five, but it is definitely number two.
Whoa.
Which turned out to be Tim Hennis. So they had to let Hennis go, though, because they didn't have a warrant yet. So Hennis goes back home. Later that evening, they get a warrant, and they go in and arrest Hennis. So Hennis, his reply, as they tell him, you know, we have a warrant for your arrest, and we have a warrant to search your home. He says, I hope you guys know what you're doing. He was handcuffed and charged with three counts of murder and one count of sexual assault. So he then made a comment, looks like I'm going to get to wear one of those little orange jumpsuits, huh? So just a real, real piece of work.
Cross that off the old buddy list.
So now, since Hennis was in the Army could have court-martialed him on murder charges, but since crimes committed off-base typically were prosecuted by Cumberland County, they left it up to them. Hennis's father, who was a retired IBM executive, hired two very prominent Fayetteville lawyers, Gerald Beaver and Billy Richardson, to defend Tim.
Billy and the Beeve.
Billy and the Beeve. Or what's the law firm?
LLC.
LLC.
No, LLC is business.
Oh, yeah.
So Beaver and Richardson, they represented Tim. Several eyewitnesses recalled seeing a white Chevette on Summer Hill Road that evening. Hennis's alibi about returning home right after dropping off his wife and daughters was rendered to be somewhat dubious when Nancy Messer, a former girlfriend of Tim's, told detectives a different story. She said that so they had met at a honky-tonk bar at Fort Bragg, dated for a little while. After they broke up, Hennis would still occasionally stop by her house. You know, little hey, how you doing?
Oh, yeah.
And on May 9th, which was 2 days after he picked up the dog, on May 9th, he stopped by her house. Where am I at? See, he knew that... that Nancy's husband was on leave deployed in Germany. So he stopped by. Nancy let him in. They talked. She apparently pointed to Tim's wedding band, asked him how his marriage was going. Hennis said, she left me. But all of his, you know, suave moves didn't get him any that night. So she said that after that, he just left. So... the motive started to look like that Tim was just, you know, looking to bang.
Yeah.
So he couldn't get it from Nancy, so he maybe he had met Katie a couple days ago when he picked up the dog. So he went back to Katie's house.
Ugh. The kids.
So, and then, you know, probably tried to smooth talk his way in, and when that didn't work, they're thinking he just forced his way in.
Yeah.
Big dude, you know, 6'6".
Yeah.
So the Friday morning after the murders, Hennis had taken one item of clothing to the dry cleaners, a black members-only jacket. The same looking members-only jacket that the janitor saw. So And that Saturday, Tim's neighbors recalled that they had seen Tim pouring lighter fluid into a 55-gallon barrel and had a little bit of a bonfire going for about 5 hours.
He has a burn barrel. What happens in the burn barrel stays in the burn barrel.
So Hennis, though, did go voluntarily to the police station, you know, originally. But that's can commonly be seen as a way to
try to
make
see
them
what
think
they have.
That, see what they have and make it look like you're definitely not guilty. Because look at me, I'm showing up.
Most killers think they're smarter, the smartest person in the room.
Yeah. So this was in 85. So forensic science was starting to be, you know, but it really wasn't what it is now. He knew that Scotland Yard, one of the detectives, knew that Scotland Yard had been experimenting with DNA testing. So they wrote a letter to London requesting assistance on the case. Scotland Yard declined, though. Even without that, though, the detectives, they knew it had to be Tim. They just knew. So, month before the trial, another eyewitness emerged, because Tim gets charged, you know, with murder, triple homicide, and sexual assault. Month before the trial, another eyewitness comes forward, says that, investigators had discovered that the ATM card stolen from Katie was used on May 10th at 10:54 p.m. and on May 11th at 8:56 a.m., both times, the maximum amount allowed, $150 at the time, was withdrawn. And Hennis just so happened to pay about $300 in rent. And he was late that month. So looks like he got his $300 just in the nick of time for rent. He had a history of financial problems, including 3 prior convictions for writing bad checks. In 1984, he was kicked out of a flight school for bouncing checks and lying to an officer about it.
That doesn't fly around here, and neither do you, brother.
Brother.
That's
brother.
How it went.
That's
a dramatic reenactment.
It was pretty dramatic, yeah, I thought.
I brought it.
Very dramatic. Not too over-dramatic.
Yeah.
Just dramatic enough.
Oh, yeah.
So after the murder, investigators tracked down a woman who visited the ATM 3 minutes after Katie's stolen card had been used. She said that she recalled seeing a tall man with blonde hair wearing camouflage trousers. Those were pants.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Fancy pants. Wearing a tall blonde man wearing camouflage pants and getting into a small white car. So more and more, it's Tim. It's gotta
be Tim, yeah.
So before the trial.
An evil twin brother.
Jim.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Jim Hennis.
With his dog, Dolly.
So before the trial, Hennis was offered a plea bargain, 2 counts of second-degree murder with a likely penalty of 2 consecutive life sentences. He told his lawyer, "I'm not pleading guilty to something I didn't do." At the trial in the summer of 86, the lead prosecutor, William Van Story, pretty good prosecutor name, told the jurors, "What happened in that house was utter madness. It was one of the most tragic things that ever happened in this country." He showed dozens of gruesome photographs in the crime scene. Cone took the stand and identified Hennis as the man he saw on the morning of May 10th. Van Story asked him, "Is there any doubt in your mind?" He says, "No, sir. That's him." Van Story saved his most emotional language for the closing argument, where he said, "There's your baby killer," as he points to Tim Hennis. "He's the one responsible for the deaths of these kids and their mother. The man responsible for taking their lives is sitting in this courtroom, breathing the same air as you are, and hopefully it won't be like that for much longer." The jury deliberated for about 10 hours before returning guilty verdicts on all counts, 3 of first-degree murder and 1 of sexual assault. Hennis pulled off his wedding band and said to Richardson, "Give this to Angela, tell her I love her." And then Hennis was led from the courthouse to a suicide prevention cell. 3 days later, he was sentenced, and he got the death penalty.
Wow.
So while the defense lawyers prepared an appeal, Hennis was shifted upstate to a prison in Raleigh. He was one of 17 convicts on death row. 9 weeks after he arrived, an inmate was executed by lethal injection.
What?
He wasn't. 9
weeks.
Oh,
another. I was that is the quickest.
So at the facility, while he's there on death row, Tim Hennis receives a letter postmarked July 8th, which would be the day of his sentencing. And it reads, "Dear Mr. Hennis, I did the crime. I murdered the Eastburns. Sorry you're doing the time. I'll be safely out of North Carolina when you read this. Thanks, Mr. X." So
Thaddeus Smith, and that's crossed out once. Not
twice,
David
actually.
Smith.
It's just kept doing it. Yeah. So authorities
X'd out.
Authorities never did determine Mr. X's identity. The sheriff's office also received a letter from Mr. X, so that basically said the same thing, like, you got the wrong guy. So Gary Eastburn, meanwhile, you know, he's struggling. He had met Katie 12 years earlier at a softball game. It was like a singles thing, like you
try to hit a home run.
Yep. So you show up single and you go for a triple.
Yep. Try sliding the home.
So he recalls that it was, quote, like somebody hit me between the eyes with a ball peen hammer. It's kind of a weird thing to say.
Yeah, it
kind
of is.
I was madly in love with her. They were married in 1975. Katie got pregnant 3 years later. In 1983, the Air Force sent Gary and his family to Pope Air Force Base, where Gary was a chief of air traffic control. When Gary proposed moving to England, Katie was initially reluctant. She worried about being away from her parents, who lived in Kansas. But she was passionate about horses, and after Gary told her that she and the girls would have ample opportunities to ride in the English countryside, she agreed to go. When Katie was murdered, Gary canceled his plans to go abroad. He did finally accept the liaison job in 1988, taking the surviving child with him. A few months later, detectives called Gary and said that he needed to come back to North Carolina immediately. Hennis's appeal had reached the state Supreme Court, where Gerald Beaver, Hennis's lawyer, argued that the many graphic photographs shown by the prosecution had unduly inflamed jurors against his client. Like,
don't show him what he did.
Yeah. We're not allowed to show them the evidence.
Yeah.
The judges ruled 5-2.
I'd say we just show pictures of Dixie.
So the judges ruled 5-2 in Hennis's favor.
Guilty of being cute.
And awarded him a retrial.
Aw.
For almost 3 years, Hennis's lawyers had been preparing ways to undermine the government's case. At the retrial in Wilmington, they focused on discrediting Patrick Cohn. In court, Beaver
referred... He is just a janitor.
In court, Beaver referred to him as a thief and a liar.
Oh!
Now, also, Patrick Cohn happened to be a black man. So, you know, 1985, sure. North Carolina. Probably easy to discredit him, I'd say, at the time.
Bullshit.
Between the first and second trials, Cohn had committed several criminal offenses, including attempting to use a stolen ATM card, being drunk in public and obstructing an officer, driving a car with an expired registration. During the drunken episode, he told a cop, "You can't arrest me. I'm helping you guys out."
Ha!
He went on, "You need to check with your district attorney, man. They know me, and I'm their witness. I'm a witness in the Hennis trial." So those charges, like the others, were dismissed. Then one night in February 89, Jack Watts, the detective, stopped a vehicle that Cohn was driving with a friend in the passenger seat. Cohn failed a sobriety test. Instead of arresting him, Watts told Cohn's friend to drive him home. The friend later informed Hennis's defense team that Cohn had told him, "I can do anything I want." So that starts to look kind of bad.
Yeah.
That starts to look like this guy's telling the cops what they want to hear, and in exchange,
he can
do what he wants. Hennis's lawyers also suggested that Cohn's testimony at the first trial was inaccurate. Cohn had said that the weather on the night of the murders was fair, with stars out, but a meteorologist called by the defense proved records that depicted it as a cloudy night. A local helicopter pilot...
So we're ruling out werewolf.
It was not a werewolf.
Okay.
Dixie didn't turn into a werewolf.
Oh, Dixie.
So a local helicopter pilot was supposed to go on a medevac mission that morning, but it actually had to cancel it because it was so dark and overcast. So the detective told Patrick Cohn that despite all of that, he never doubted Cohn's statement.
Yeah.
The detective said that Mr. Cohn did have some problems. He was a street kid and he drank, but he didn't have to come forward.
Yeah.
You know, so to this day, or to whenever this story was written, he had always believed Patrick Cohn was telling the truth. But there was enough uncertainty on his testimony that it pretty much became worthless. So before the retrial, William Van Story, the original prosecutor, had left the district attorney's office for private practice. The prosecutors assigned to the retrial, Calvin Collier and John Dickinson, seemed listless by comparison. Gary Eastburn would later say that those two just pretty much mailed the case in.
Yeah.
The defense, meanwhile, scored one point after another. On the stand, Gary confirmed that 2 months before Hennis picked up the dog, Katie had received threatening phone calls in the middle of the night from a man who knew her name and said that he was coming over. And then the letters from Mr. X were read aloud in the courtroom. So we can't show pictures of what actually
was but
there.
You get letters in the mail
from a Mr. X.
Yeah.
Which, you know, could be the form or the professional wrestler that used to wrestle for XMCW and NWA Tri-State, and I've wrestled him before, Mr. X.
I bet it is Mr. X.
The defense also emphasized
that misdirection.
Ooh.
Misdirection. Well, don't say that. Misdirection.
That should be a new part of Craigslist. Instead of misconnections, misdirections.
Oh,
I had an erection for you, and you didn't do anything about it. You missed out on this erection. It was a good one. It was a good one. You should have seen it. So the defense also emphasized that just weeks after the murders, the woman who testified to seeing a man resembling Hennis at the ATM had told an investigator that she didn't remember seeing anything. She apparently just basically made her story up on the eve of the first trial, assuring prosecutors that she had seen a tall, blonde man. But, you know, later she would say, I really don't even actually remember if I saw anything. A pair of new witnesses testified on Tim Hennis's behalf. A woman who delivered the Raleigh News and Observer each morning revealed that at 1:45 a.m., she had seen in front of the Eastburn home a long-haired man driving a light-colored van, not a short-haired man driving a white Chevette.
That's like the complete opposite.
Exactly. The defense then called to the stand a tall, blonde teenage boy from the East Burns neighborhood. This guy, you know, who's tall, he's could be very comparable. He always walked Summer Hill Road late at night and admitted that he had been doing so around 3 a.m.
With a trash bag?
So that this could have been the person that Cone had seen.
Yeah.
With a
trash bag and a black members only jacket.
When the boy appeared in court, the room fell silent. The guy was a spitting image of Hennis. They could have been brothers, one of the jurors said. That was more or less the icing on the cake for them, for me, this guy said. The defense still had more. Footprints found outside the house were three sizes smaller than Hennis's shoes. A spot of blood discovered on a bathroom towel did not match Hennis's blood. Investigators had found in the Eastburns' house several hairs, including pubic hair, that belonged to neither Hennis nor the victims. The house was a rental, and the pubic hair had been found near a couch in the living room, not on Katie Eastburn's body. But the prosecution did little to contest the defense's presentation. As for the fire that Hennis set in the backyard after the murder, the defense said that there had been nothing in the charred remains that had been traced back to the Eastburn home. And not only did Hennis's members-only jacket lack any bloodstains, but an analyst from the International Fabric Care Institute, which is a thing,
hell yeah, flew that guy in,
testified that a chemical used in dry cleaning called Varsol could not remove all traces of blood.
Yeah, they would have to.
So on April 10th, 1989, Hennis took the stand. His lawyers, Beaver and Richardson, reasoned that their client had nothing to hide.
Billy and the Beef!
I love it.
That's a good
I hope that's how,
show.
How Tim Hennis started. He got on the stand. Billy and the Beef!
Billy and the Beef!
Hennis had been... So they said they weren't worried about this because Hennis had been rehearsing his testimony for weeks. He appeared in court wearing a dark suit, even with courtroom sentiments leaning his way. Hennis responded brusquely to questioning, answering a question from one of the prosecutors about dog breeds. Tim Hennis said, quote, "A German short-haired pointer, sir, has very close-cropped hair, something like your beard. A long-haired Spitz, which is what Dixie was, would have something of hair like your head hair, very long." At one point, the prosecutor asked him, "So Katie Eastburn was an attractive woman, wasn't she?" And then Hennis retorted, "It depends on what you find attractive." And then the prosecutor asked, "Did you think she was an attractive woman?" And Hennis is like, "Yeah, he was attractive. Whatever." When Hennis was asked about his initially undisclosed visit with Nancy Mazur, his ex, he said, "Oh, I just forgot about that. I didn't place much emphasis on it. It was something that slipped my mind." One of the jurors said, "Frankly, he looked like he could have been the kind of asshole who could have done it." But he added, "The black guy who wears," this is a direct quote, "the black guy who wears a bunch of gold chains and a do-rag," he said that looks can be deceiving, though, because there's, black guys that wear a bunch of gold chains and do-rags, that doesn't necessarily make them a thug. Okay. You're right, but, like...
What a weird fucking...
But kind of a weird comparison to make. So both sides rested their case a week later. Richardson, one of the defense lawyers, had told the jury, you have physical evidence crying to you, just absolutely crying to you, that Tim Hennis is not the man. You've got a pubic hair in there that ain't him. They're putting a doggone square peg in a round hole.
I tell you what.
They're putting a doggone square peg in a round hole, and it doesn't fit, and it stinks.
And it stinks. What was it before that?
Your Honor.
Your Honor.
Let me pat my head real quick. 2 days later,
I do declare.
The jury reached a verdict.
Not guilty.
Not guilty on all counts.
Fuck.
One of the jurors said, I don't see how we could have done anything different. After more than 800 days on death row, Hennis left the courtroom a free man and went back to his life, raising Christina, who was now his daughter, who was now 4 years old. Some of the jurors shook his hand, congratulating him. Leaving the proceedings, Gary Eastburn told a juror that he still believed Hennis was guilty. Gary climbed into the passenger seat of one of the original prosecutor's cars, went back to Fayetteville, and that prosecutor said, that was the longest drive I have ever been on in my life. I felt sick, like someone had sucked the air out of me. I felt like I let Gary down, like I let Jana down. And he said, though, that he wasn't ready to give up. Somebody had to speak for the dead. So, Tim Hennis, you know, found guilty the first time.
Yeah.
And then in the retrial, found not guilty on all charges. So, did he kill Katie Eastburn? We'll find out in part two.
Oh, shit! You cliffhung me.
Because there's still quite a bit to go.
You cliffhung me.
Yeah. So,
damn.
Yeah. So, what do you think so far?
So far, I mean, there's
not a lot of evidence.
Member's only black leather jacket, though.
Not a lot of evidence,
though. The garbage bag. I don't know. I think he did it, but we'll see.
Okay. So, we'll be back with part two of that.
What?
Next time we record. You know, happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, thank you.
To all the moms out there.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you.
Thank you.
Happy Mom's Day, Joel.
Thanks, man.
Yeah,
happy Mother's Day.
You do a great job being a mom.
I try. Now go to your room. We're already here. Okay.
You got anything?
Nope. Still nothing.
Still nothing? You're sleepy.
Thanks for listening. Yeah.
You look real sleepy.
Yeah, I'm a sleepy boy.
I wonder how long I can talk and just make you.
I need a nap. I almost fell asleep once during that.
I saw that. Yeah. You might have like a touch of narcolepsy.
I don't sleep good at all. I have apnea, sleep apnea.
So then you just sort of fall asleep randomly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Especially on car rides.
It's all, man, yeah. I can fall asleep pretty good on a car ride.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. All right. Well, until next time, do all the stuff. I'll be check out First City Podcast, First City Records, First City Podcast.
Yeah.
We were on there a few weeks ago. And then
he liked us so back. He wanted us. He liked us so much. He wanted us back.
Yeah, it only bring me back. this Wednesday,
you're the talker. Obviously.
There'll be an episode coming out where I will be guest hosting. Talk with Aaron Whited, the host of the First City Podcast,
the owner of the store,
owner of the First City Records in Marietta,
good boy extraordinaire.
Yeah,
maybe. That's for you to find out.
That's for you to find out, though.
That's for you to find out.
Will we bring him in?
Yeah.
To GBX.
An honorary GBX.
Yeah. He did bring a Cole Cash is going to kill you sign to my last wrestling match.
Yep.
Which was pretty cool.
He gave me a sign that's like Cash rules the world or something.
And you know what?
What?
When I watched, you can go to YouTube right now. You can watch Saturday Night Shootmasters.
Uh-huh. You saw me sleeping?
No.
Oh.
But you kept saying that I didn't even acknowledge you.
Uh-huh.
I did acknowledge
you.
You
did?
I remembered now.
What?
When I went to give back Aaron his sign, I noticed that you had one too, but I was like, I'm not going to fight through all those people to get this one.
Yeah.
So I did point to you, though.
Oh, you pointed
and I was
at
like,
me. I was blinded by the light that was Cole Cash.
Yeah, but I did acknowledge you.
Thanks for acknowledging me, Cole.
So don't call me Cole.
Cole,
you're
thank
not Bobby
you.
Eaton.
Thank you,
you're
Cole.
You're not Bobby Eaton.
Thank you.
Only Bob Eaton gets to call me Cole.
The Cole and Joel Express. Or Joel or and Cole
if
Express.
If we're saying Joel and Cole Express, it's fine.
Okay.
Otherwise, only Bob Eaton.
All right.
Well, I think that's it for us. Do all the stuff. You know, share, like.
For Cole, I'm Joel. We'll see you next time.
Son of a bitch.